This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Alan Jackson singing about a boat engine.
It was painted red, the stripe was white, it was 18 feet.
But we're not going to listen to it because I got shit to do. Joining me from the state of Texas is a retired Marine Corps major of infantry type Marines, of all Marines, specializing in the infantry occupational field, Timothy Lynch. Tim, what's up?
How are you? Good morning,
Mike. How's the, Tim, actually when I got a hold of him this morning, he said he was weeding. Yeah.
I was. Yeah, weeding the fire beds out front. It's a beautiful day here.
All right, so, and where in Texas? Tell everybody where you're at.
McAllen, down in tropical Texas.
That's south of Galveston. Are you on the coast or a little bit inland?
No, I'm 60 miles in from the coast. It's in the Rio Grande Valley.
Okay.
Which starts up around, it's down right on the border. I'm about 60 miles inland from the coast.
Okay, all right. And also joining us today by the wonders of telecommunications is somebody who's getting to be a regular feature here on All Marine Radio, Jeff Kenny, retired Colonel, United States Marine Corps. So, Jeff, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Matt. And good morning to you, Tim.
Hey, how's it going, Jeff?
Great. It's great hearing you.
No. Great to hear you.
All right. I'm going to tell everybody right now, both these two monkeys, all right, have attention deficit disorder, okay? When we start on a subject, the next thing you'll do is you'll look up and you're doing Stewart's Ride around McClellan. And all of a sudden you're like, how the hell did we get here? Okay, so Jeff has been wire brushed by his wife. But in Jeff's defense, he's had a traumatic brain injury. Okay, so that's a Visa card that I don't think he plays enough. If I was him, I would be playing it all the time. Especially when my wife were to shit on me. I'd start twitching, my eyes blinking. Right? And what would she say? Don't play that shit with me. I know.
Exactly.
I know your tricks. But Tim has no excuse. His brain is perfectly fine. Okay? Now, I want to outline, Tim, you spent time in Baghdad and Afghanistan, yes?
I did.
Okay, what years were you in Iraq?
2004.
2004 in Iraq, and then in Afghanistan?
2005 until 2012.
All right, now, so Tim's there in both places as a quote-unquote contractor doing shit, okay? Jeff, your time in Iraq, how many times were you in Iraq?
I was in Iraq in 2005 and 2006.
When were you blown up in Iraq?
In May of 2006.
May in 2006. I was there in May of 2006. That's right. I didn't know that you had got blown up till Kennedy told me.
He told me it was your fault.
No. I wasn't. You were like out in the sticks, man. Now,
yeah.
Were you advising then?
Yes, I was.
Where exactly did you get blown up?
I got blown up in a little town called Dulab outside of Al Asad Air Base. And it's right by the Euphrates River, and I got hit by an IED that destroyed the Hummer I was in, and killed the guy behind me, who happened to be the XO of the Iraqi brigade, and wounded the rest of us.
All right. So you're there twice, and then how many times in Afghanistan?
I was in Afghanistan three times.
All right, doing what?
Well, I was advising. Incidentally, the first advisory tour I had, I was co-located with Tim in the Jalalabad area, so we were able to see each other once in a while. We used to give him free milk that we filched from the dining facility and stuff.
Is there anything as good as seeing your buddies when you're over there in the land of the shit?
It was great.
It's fun. I saw Tim in Helmand, and we always had a good time. But whenever you come across your good friends, you see them, and then you're actually able to talk business a little bit, but have a good time. All right, first thing, Tim, you live down on the border. Do we need a wall?
We need some kind of an ability to to seal up the border, to make the wall along the whole border. The wall's problematic. You know, it's right now the wall that they have down here already cuts through farmers' fields, so they've got to go up to gates and call and get somebody to unlock the thing so they can get into the other side of the field and whatnot. It's not exactly an inconvenient thing, but look, I mean, most of the people down here in the valley, I mean, it's predominantly Mexican American. They don't want a whole lot of illegals flooding the border either. You know, it drives down wages. It's not good for them.
All right. So your answer is that we need to secure the border. That may take the form of a wall in some places and other things in other places, but securing the border would be the military mission.
I don't think there's any question about that. It's a damn problem.
All right.
Last time we talked about this, if those people tended to vote Republican, that border would be sealed like a tighter than a drum. You better believe that.
Well, you know, but even the Democrats, you know, historically approved all kinds of money for this. But they can't do it anymore because that means the president wins on a signature right issue, and they will not allow that. Okay, that's why he will get nothing.
Nope.
He will get nothing. So the shutdown, I don't know how it ends, but I don't know. And I'm not even going to ask Kenny because Kenny wants a wall the whole way. We could solve this. We built the Grand Coulee Dam, for God's sakes. We could build a wall anywhere. It's just concrete. Build a road. Get the concrete. Look. See the anyway. So
work on that wall.
All right. So let's talk about look into your crystal ball, boys. And what do you see? Jeff, you go first since you're the subject matter expert. In 2 years in Syria and bleeding into Iraq, what will we see?
Well, I think in Syria. And bleeding into Iraq, I think what you'll see in Syria is that the Kurds are not confident of the promises we make to support them from afar. Yeah. So I think they will make a deal with the Peshmerga and will make a deal with Hafez Assad Jr. there, whatever his first name is, and to hold what they have and try and play them against the Turks. And the Turks will want to go in there it's based on historical, you know, habit, they've been trying to kill all these, wipe out the Kurdish resistance for decades. So I think that'll be a turning, you know, torque point. And the guys who will be the arbiters of that will be the Russians who are in there. And in doing that, all three of those entities will spend gazillions of money, which usually is America's job to spend waste money on things that won't succeed. But in this case, I think that won't happen. And, The other thing that will happen is
you just used a double negative.
What?
So well, they're going to spend money, and they're not going to succeed,
Think what's going to happen is you're going to have the Kurds' territory kind of secured by the fact that they're not going to have to worry about Hafez Assad and the Syrian folks coming after them.
Okay.
And all they have to worry about then is the Turks.
Okay.
At least on that front. I think in Iraq, what you'll see is,
Okay, hold on. Okay, so what happens when, what happens with the Turks?
Well, I think what will happen then, the Turks will still want to pursue operations against the Kurds.
And?
And so then they'll be blocked, possibly by the Russian and, or at least not supported by the, by the Russians who are in there supporting the government of Syria.
All right. So the Russians say you're going to go that alone, and the Turks at some point will bog down, and then we'll have the whole ID fest, ambushing, general shit show.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. Okay. All right. So that's anything else you want to add to that? What? How about the Islamic State and Iraq? How does that all work?
I think the Islamic State is just another form of. Islamic militantism.
Right.
If ISIS goes away, something else will pop up.
Okay.
There's too much, it's just that boil has not been lanced. And it's pretty much rife throughout the Muslim world. I mean, these two young college girls were murdered in Morocco,
right,
by people claiming to be part of the Islamic State, and because they had the temerity to walk unescorted, uncovered through the Atlas Mountains in Morocco, and they were murdered. And it's kind of a big thing in the news, as right, these things are. But so I think that ISIS may, you know, be shrunk down, and they're pretty much shrunk down now. But I think they'll reemerge either in the same form or another form. You get Al Qaeda, part two. You get ISIS part two, whatever. They'll pop up somewhere else.
And the
whole issue is really between Shia and Sunni Muslims. I mean, that right, issue is it's all interconnected. The struggle in Iraq, the struggle in Syria, the struggle in Yemen, all the way over to Afghanistan. And the whole thing really is Iran's push to make the Shia state, the Shia caliphate, that will stretch in their minds from Lebanon all the way into Afghanistan.
And the pushback by the Arab states led by
right,
Saudi Arabia.
Sunnis.
Which is, okay.
Sunnis.
So what, I'm sorry, the Sunnis. The Sunni Arab states, is that a better way to
right,
say that? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so what happens, so does the Islamic State or whatever comes after it, does that reassert itself in Iraq?
Well, I think they may try. Like once we're gone, they'll try. Yeah, they'll try, and part of it'll be a self-defense mechanism, because Iraq is a majority Shia country,
right?
And so those empty places along the Euphrates River, we used to call the WERV, the Western Euphrates River Valley,
I
think be another stronghold for ISIS type organizations because it's Sunni,
right,
and they will. I mean, by all accounts, they will probably not be happy with the type of government that Baghdad gives them.
Okay.
And since the party of, what was his name, that little dude who was a Shia, Tim knows what I'm talking about, and you too, remember that guy who ran the thing in Najaf and all that stuff?
Sadr?
Mutaka Sadr.
The party that won, the last election was won by a party sympathetic to him.
Right.
So it could be that they haven't really made any moves like saying, hey, U.S., get out. But
Sadr went to Riyadh. Did you see
his brand of Shia, Iraqi Shia militancy that pretty much won the election.
But he also told Iran, hey, you're not coming in here and taking this thing over.
Yeah, that's the other.
Yeah, which is weird.
They're not, even though the Shia Iraqis largely are distrustful and they dislike the Iranian Shia. There are two racial differences, very subtle, but the Iranians are Persian, mostly, and of course the Iraqis are Arab, and they tend to look down on each other.
Right, and it's not real apparent to us, but it is to them.
Oh yeah, I tell you what, I was advising the Second Brigade there in the Al Asad Haditha area. You know, you'd be there with these Shia troops, and they'd see the others coming up, and they knew if a guy was a Sunni or a Shia. And I'm like, how can you know? You both look exactly alike to me, you know. And it wasn't a matter of context either. Like, you know, if a guy comes from this town, he's going to be, you know, Sunni. I'm talking people in uniform. They look right at the guy and know, this guy is a Sunni.
Let me tell you, I don't know if you recall this name, but in 2004, we got these guys called the Sewanis.
Yeah, Sewanis, yeah.
Right?
Sewani Brigade.
Sewani Brigade. And so Jerry Durant helped, I think, broker it, and these guys are
right,
going to come. These guys are going to come work. So they go over they go into the city. And they're standing there at a vehicle checkpoint, a VCP, smoking cigarettes. And the first, like, they're on they're in business for like 10 minutes. And they look at the Marines and they say, the third car, those guys. They go in, they pull these guys out. There's all kinds of money. And they're like, they say the same thing you said. How did you know? And like, come on, man, we're from around here. We're not like bozos like you assholes are.
Yep.
And so it was hilarious, the difference. Okay, so we're gonna go back to some form of active civil war in the western part of Iraq. I just want to make sure I have the prediction right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, I don't know.
What?
Well, I don't know if this will work. It depends on how heavy-handed the Shia are running Iraq once.
Look, stop. You can't equivocate when you're doing predictions. You got to say, yeah, this is what I predict. Like, come on. What the hell? Have you never predicted anything?
All right. I mean, it's just, I will. I'll say, yeah, there probably will be some violence. How much, you know, I don't know.
All right, Lynch. Give me your prediction for Syria, and then for Iraq.
Well, I don't think that we're going to step aside and let the Turks go after the Kurds. I don't think the Turks can go after the Kurds as effectively as they think they can either. So
wait a minute, hold on.
But
the president just said we were stepping aside.
Yeah, I know. That's what he said. But the Turks go after the Kurds. I mean, you got this thing called the Congress, right? They wanted to be in the game. Now they're in the game. But I don't think we will. But you know what Jeff said is I consider myself unusually well informed because I listened to Jerry Durant and you talk about this, and it's exactly what Durant said. All the Syrian guys are looking for a visa to get the hell out.
Right.
You know, so it's going to definitely degenerate. Mm-hmm. But I don't see us letting the Turks come across the border and thump the Kurds.
Okay, hold on. Okay, hold on. So relative to Syria, what's going to happen in Syria?
We're going to pull out. I think Russia and Iran are going to assert a significant degree of influence. I think there's going to be some instability with the Turks going after the Kurds, which I think is going to introduce our dumbasses right back in there.
Okay, so you see a fight between the Kurds and the Turks, and then what do you see relative to the rest of Syria? Do you see, let me see, how do I frame this? So
I think Assad stays in the area of, you know, on the Euphrates, on which apparently we've got 2,000 to 4,000 troops right now, something like that. But that area stays with that coalition. I don't know what the hell's going to happen with that.
Got it. You guys suck as predictors, man. Just so you know, you guys like.
No, it's hard.
Yeah, you guys are like equivocating and qualifying.
hey, we're both over the Civil War. That's important.
Everything that'll happen.
Listen to Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenney, suck-ass prediction. All right, Lynch, what about Iraq?
I think it's just like Jeff said. You know, you've got a Shia majority of government. They're going to try to go their own way. The guys out in Sunni land are not going to be happy with whatever they get. It's going to be right for all types of nefarious activity. And then, I don't think it's... If it's not ISIS, it'll be somebody else that rises up to smite the Shia tyranny. It's going to be a fiasco.
Got it. Okay. Any comment about Iran, Israel in the next 2 years? Kenny?
Yeah. I think I think Israel's going to really flex its muscles, you know, air-wise and stuff like that in Syria, and that's going to piss the Iranians off. Another thing the Israelis might, it's so weird, in a way it's a good thing, the Israelis have common cause with the Saudis now, because the one thing that your average Israeli will probably tell you, the best thing you can say about the Saudis is the Iranians are worse as far as hating Israel. So, it behooves both of them to not have the Houthis gain control of Yemen because they're Shia. That's where, that's the nexus of that war in Yemen. And the Saudis are actively engaged in that. And I think Israelis, you know, feel the same way. So what will happen is you get this kind of like another version of the Cold War where you have, you know, the power of Israel, the power of Iran, and then a little bit of a lesser power but heavily supported by the United States, Saudi Arabia, squaring off and really providing equilibrium, and I think that's what will happen. The other thing, too, is you got another factor, and it's Donald Trump. And Donald Trump doesn't look at things the same way your classic leaders do. He'll find something else the Turks want. I'm not saying I know this or even, you know, have a basis for it, but it seems to me the way he'll operate is he'll find something that these countries that seem to be in, you know, in transient with each other, what they both want, and try and figure out a way to give them at least a modicum of that to calm the tensions down. So that ultimately he doesn't have to send a shitload of Marines and Army dudes over there to get killed. Because I think that's what he really finds abhorrent, you know, the idea of our guys getting killed on the other side of the world for issues that's arguable how much really affect the average American back home.
All right. Tim, what about you? Israel, Iran in the next 2 years, given the American
role? Israel's not going to tolerate Hezbollah, you know, rearming and starting to reestablish a presence on the border. You know, they can't do that. But Jeff's right. They got common cause with both Saudi Arabia and Jordan, for that matter. So that's going to be a little bit of an interesting thing. And as far as we know, we've got the full blacking of the current administration. So, I mean, you know, it's not like them to let an opportunity to strike at something that causes Hezbollah in particular a lot of pain. It's not like them to let that go.
Yes or no, do you expect Israel and Iran to shoot at each other in the next 24 months? Jeff?
They're going to kill each other's proxies in Syria and Iraq, probably.
Okay, so they'll continue the proxy shit, but they won't square off with each other. Because
right.
Israel's taken, they've gone after the Iranian manning weapon radar sites and missile sites around what, like T4, there's air bases that the Iranians have that they work their magic out of. So that's been the extent of the actual clash. So
yeah,
you see that that kind of shit and the proxy.
Here's the other
stuff
thing too about both. I do. Both those countries, Israel and Iran, for that matter, are not. They have restive minorities within the country, both.
Right.
And I can tell you, I got a little experience in Iran, and there's huge numbers of Iranians who don't like this Ayatollah-led government, who don't like all the restrictions that have been put on them, and are constantly agitating. Like in 2009, I think it would help them a little bit, could even make Iran less of a factor.
Right. I agree.
And Israel has the same thing. They have their people who don't believe in walls and everything, just like we do. And, you know, even though it really worked for them on a couple different levels. Another thing you're going to see is Iran will push the Hezbollah to push assets to help out the Palestinian government, specifically the Muslim Brotherhood, and try to foment even more problems there. The Israelis kill a Muslim in the Gaza Strip or, you know, on the West Bank or whatever. It reverberates, you know, hugely throughout the Muslim world. So they'll do that to try and make sure there's that wedge between the Saudis and the Jordanians and the Israelis. So basically it's a murderous mess that goes on and on.
Right, right. All right. Tim, any final thoughts on Israel and Iran?
Nope. I think Jeff's read on that is 100% correct.
Got it. All right. Let's transition to – here's what I think. I think that ISIS will reassert itself. I think they will go ahead and they will shit kick the Iraqi security forces out of that valley again if we are not there actively involved. Now, we say, again, and that's a moving target. So I say ISIS is a function of American involvement. If Americans stay at Al-Assad, if our drones continue to work, if our advisors stay out there, then we'll play whack-a-mole like we have. If we don't, if we unask that, then stand by for the carnival, the civil war that has fluctuated since 2004. That has been going on there. Stand by for that civil war to get going again. And as Jeff said, you know, the Sunni sentiment relative to the Shiite government in Baghdad is this thing is gonna go on. I see bad things. I see Turkey overextending themselves, and I see the Kurd the conflict between the Turks and the Kurds getting inflamed, and I see it spreading into Turkey. And Turkey will pay a heavy price for it.
Yeah.
And so that's what I see. So they're gonna, if they go after the Kurds,
it's like,
that thing's gonna back, that's gonna snap back into their faces because they don't have the ass to do it, right? The territory's too big, whatnot. And if they begin it, then the Kurds will find ways to go into Turkey and fuck up a lot of shit, and it will cause Turkey great problems. So that's my prediction. Go ahead, Jeff.
I was gonna say, you know, when there was relative peace, it was when we had our guy, or a guy who was friendly to us in Iran, Shah Pahlavi, and then you had Hussein as the president of Iraq, and you had Assad's father, who was even more of a son of a bitch than he was. And between those three hard asses, they kept everything pretty much in check.
Iron fist, right? Rule with the iron fist, like Saddam did.
But they all. Yeah. I hate to say it. That's the piece they got there. You know, and then you can say, you go all the way back to World War One, the Sykes-Picot Treaty, that, you know, basically boundaries that are there now without really asking the folks who lived there. So,
yeah,
the
Brits and the French fucking the whole world up with their crayons on maps. They're like, oh, yeah, let's put them together. No problem. And really, in fact, the only way to keep the peace is to do it with an iron fist. But, hey, not good for human rights. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah, they made a lot of whole thing, the whole India-Pakistan thing. The Brits fucking laid that one on us, too.
Yeah, what about...
In 1947.
Yeah, what was it? Bosnia, right? That's another event, courtesy of the Brits just fucking it up all over the planet, okay? Do we expect, with the American withdrawal, do we expect things to be calmer in the wake of that withdrawal, or do we expect them to be more violent? Tim?
I would say more violent.
Jeff?
More violent. I don't necessarily think right in Syria where the police complex will remain in the ISIS to be more violent, but there's going to be a lot of tension, a lot of potential for violence after we leave. It may not suddenly explode.
Look, I need you to predict, not equivocate. Okay, make a
prediction. Okay, I predict that if we precipitate pull out, that things are going to stabilize, and you're going to have a little false war going on for about 10 months, and then shit's going to hit the fan with the Syrians in Iraq and the coalition in Syria going to help them for leather at along the Euphrates, trying to carve out more territory.
Wow. Well, see, that's a legit prediction. Congratulations. Kenny, why don't you take a swing at that? Is it going to be more or less violent after we leave?
I think it's going to stabilize, like Tim said. I think another factor, though, is the fact that the Russians need Assad so they get those warm water med ports there in the Mediterranean coast of Syria. And the Iranians are going to back up Assad because he's an Alawite, which is closely related to Shia. Right. And so they'll back that. And then the other thing you have, Turks versus the Kurds, and the Sunnis down there, absent support by Saudis, which would be harder to do without us actively helping them, you know, they just will be the horse in that race. And something else too. Another factor is Pakistan. Pakistan's Sunni. Now, they're pretty much distracted a lot by what's going on in Afghanistan, which they think in their paranoid mind of the ISI, that somehow the Afghanistan problem is a result of India machinations. Everything eventually comes around Pakistan, so it's India's fault. And the Indians exacerbate that by encouraging them to think that way, by doing stupid symbolic things within Afghanistan. So, you know, this thing can't be isolated into one set of situations here and then another one there. They're all interconnected.
All right. It's all interconnected. I love that. I vote it's going to be more violent. And I think Tim's got I think Tim actually hit it on the head. I think we'll see this kind of kabuki dance for a little while, and then I think it goes ba-boom. And I think when it goes ba-boom, there will be an Israeli and there will be an Iranian theme to it. And the Russians will be scrambling to get their asses out of the way, going, oh, shit, we didn't see this one coming. And then the United States will have a decision. Do we get
back?
Yeah,
like Israel, Pakistan, and Russia all have nukes. So
hello.
There's that.
Yeah, and that conflict is not going to be an IED event. It's going to be a tank main gun event. So so if my son, my oldest son's listening, hey, Captain, you might want to pay attention in class this fall. Okay.
And not just to the Sasser classes either.
Exactly. The kinetic ones that the Army's going to teach you. He's going down to that, I don't know, that maneuver course down at Fort Benning. Anyway,
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's their version of it. It's twice as good as EWS because it's half as long.
My guess.
I don't want anybody's feelings here.
Yeah, I know. Hey, it doesn't matter. Nobody, because everybody probably, oh, Kenny, he's a genius. He thinks he knows everything. right? The same thing. Oh, Lynch. Well, we know about him. And McNamara. McNamara, that guy's so full of shit. It's gushing out of his pupils. But
Tim is Richard Burton of our time. And I mean the guy who discovered the source to the Nile. He's driving from Jalalabad all the way to Helmand through the most dangerous part, you know, by himself. But he had a .45 with 8 rounds in it. So
but that's a tribute to him.
I had two flag grenades and 3 extra spare magazines. And I never drove from Jalalabad to Helmand. I drive up to Kabul. All the time I got to Kabul, but I only drove into the Helmand twice.
That's something, man.
It's a nice place. Someday there'll even be a paved road. All right, now let's transition to Afghanistan. So we expect in Syria, Iraq, it to be a shit show. At least Lynch and I do. 10-month moratorium, and then. Then it'll be on in some format. So we'll see. We'll see. This is a good thing this thing's recorded. Okay, now let's transition to Afghanistan. We don't really know what the quote-unquote unassing of Afghanistan looks like. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the term unass, it means to leave the fuck behind. it's a cool guy term, right? The first time you hear it, like, what did he say? Yeah, hey. And here's the way it's said. We're unassing this motherfucker. That means we're leaving, right? That's the way they're like, what? Hey, somebody tell me, what did that mean? So anyway, we don't really know what that means, okay? So I'm going to ask you to look in your crystal balls again, boys. Again, retired Marine Corps Colonel Jeff Kenny, United States Marine Corps. And we're going to do a little transition here. He joins us here via the wonders of Skype with his wife glaring at him, making him stay on topic today. And then Tim Lynch, retired major, United States Marine Corps. Now, Kenny worked for Lynch's dad, okay? So, Tim, intro the little piece we're going to have Kenny talk about.
Oh, yeah. So, well, the old man was still on active duty when we were at IOC, and he came down to see what Don Vito had gotten up to. Because, you know, we poached him. From Paris Island, where the old man was DG, right? So he walks into the bullpen, he sees Jeff, he goes, holy shit, it's Frogman! I'm like, what? He goes, it's Frogman! And Jeff is like, oh shit. So Jeff, you gotta explain where Frogman came from. I thought it was hysterical.
Well, you know, in the early 80s.
Okay,
like
hold on. Tim, explain who your dad was and what your dad's actual job was.
Yeah, my dad at the time was the Canadian General Paris Allen. He retired as a major general. And he's been on All Marine Radio a bunch of times. I mean,
awesome.
You know, talking about Vietnam. Yeah.
Awesome.
The name
awesome.
My uncle's dad. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
So it's a small world department All Marine Radio version. You know what I mean? I knew you'd get a kick out of that. Uh-huh. So tell him what Frogman was. We were howling at this.
I was a recruiter as a staff sergeant in Pueblo, Colorado. In 82-83, and Tim's dad was the district commander of the 8th Marine Corps district. He was a colonel. He came to see me, and I was doing good. And he goes, you're not frauding, are you? I go, that's horror-stricken. I go, no, sir, because I don't see how you could be doing this good without frauding. He's kidding me, but I mean, we lost 2 or 3 guys a month, it seemed, either getting fired for not putting enough people in the Marine Corps or for trying to cheat and put unqualified people in the Marine Corps, or for, you know, for other things that were misbehavior type things. Everything from DUI to sexual misconduct and stuff. And so when he suggested that, you know, I had talked to maybe two colonels before my whole life as a Marine, and he said, "Hey, you're not putting people in, are you?" "No, sir, I'm not. I'm really not." And he was good to go. He went out with me, I think, to South High School, which was nearby, you know, one of the high schools I had. And that was it. That was 1983, I think, I met his dad. And I didn't see him again until this was 1992 or 3. He came to visit IMC. He was a CG down there in Paris Island. And he recognized, he remembered me.
Fucking hysterical.
Yeah.
And he was frauding too, because he told me what he was doing, because I needed to know that kind of stuff, and I went down with Bruton D. I'm like, "Oh, okay, that's how you do it. I got it."
The thing that was rough, when Tim's dad was a district commander as a colonel, the Marine Corps was changing all its rules for what constituted how a kid could join relevant to smoking marijuana, because they passed like a sea change in the early 80s about finally acknowledging the fact that marijuana was ubiquitous, is everywhere. And so it's okay. They go back from saying you could try it 3 times in your life or 10 times in the last 3 months. And it went back and forth. So you put a guy in on the straight and narrow in April, and by June you're guilty of fraud. So, you know, it was just a kind of a dicey time to be a recruiter, you know?
Let me tell you, when was it not a dicey time to be a recruiter?
Yeah, I know. Well, you're right. It always has a set of challenges. I'll have to tell you, the guy who was my initial boss when I was a staff sergeant, he said, "Man, you missed the salad days." He was a professional recruiter. 2-3 years ago, we could put any retard in the Marine Corps we wanted. And we did. And, you know, and it was easy. You just went down to the courthouse and said, you know, say, "I'll put this guy in the Marine Corps." Judge say, "Yeah." Judge, "The jail's full," and bang, in he'd go. And that's why we had such a quality bunch of dudes in the 70s, like when I came in, which we talked about in my first podcast.
Right.
Because there was just no standard. It was the French Foreign Legion thing. We'll put all these retards and criminals and malcontents into the Marine Corps. We'll hammer the piss out of them at Paris Island, San Diego, and then what's left will be a competent force. And if you kept that same pressure on, they were. There's one thing we didn't have was suicides and pussies, but they were retarded and tough. And you had your smart guys, too. The Marine Corps always attracted that type of guy. But we had a strong, and Tim's dad will bear me out on this, In the early and mid 70s, we had a terrible problem with the quality of the force.
And we're not joking about not like the wayward kid who gets in trouble.
Right.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about, you know, bad, you know, to the point where the commandant says, "Get him out. I don't care. Process him all of it. All out. I don't care if it's me, the sergeant major, my driver left. Get him out." And that's pretty drastic.
It's like Honor Man in my series. The Honor Man in my series from the next platoon over, I was in 175. This guy's in 173 or 174. And I pulled butts with him one time during the rifle range.
Hey, did you read that butt pulling might be going away?
I know. It's crazy. Because that was like, and you stand there with your hands behind your neck looking for the other guy's shots. And just for everybody, might not know what we're talking about. We're talking about shooting for score, and the people who pull the targets up and down at the other end, there's like a ditch that you're in, and that's how you do that. But this other kid, he turned out to be the Honor Man, and then he was in the School of Infantry out there, which we used to call ITS, and he got a weekend off, so he went and he robbed the bank in El Cajon and got caught, and, you know. But this guy had been the Honor Man of the platoon next to me. And so we definitely had, you know, some... You know, there was a mass killer by the name of Vietnamese immigrant by the name of NG. Do you remember him, Tim? Ng, Nate?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do.
Yeah, he was in 3rd Marines. And he's a tough little bastard. But he's a psychopathic killer, too. And he, you know, Charles Ng, I think. Charles NG is how you spell his name. But so he had some bad apples. And we changed that in the early 80s. And then it kept getting better and better because of the, you know, the things that General Wilson first,
right,
coming out in the mid-30s, followed by General Barrow, and then reinforced by General Kelly. And finally, you know, I think that when General Gray was commandant, you know, that's when he really pushed that quality force to their limit, you know, to as far as how good you could be.
The all right, I just wanted everybody to hear that little aside. Jeff Kenny getting yoked up by Colonel Lynch. It is a funny story. The other thing, Jeff, Tim's uncle was on, and
yeah, company commander in Vietnam too. Yeah.
Yeah, he told this story. So he's telling a story, then he says, I go back, I'm doing recruiting in upstate New York, blah, 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 blah. And while I was there, and so, you know, I'm listening, right? And he says, while I was there, I did over 100 CAECO calls, but the recruiting thing was going good, and blah, blah, blah. I said, excuse me, could you stop? I said, did you just say 100 CAECO calls? He said, yes, it was 1968 during the Tet Offensive, you know, and he said it was horrible. And so I called my monitor and said, I can't do this anymore. I got to go. And the guy says, only place I got it for you to go is Vietnam. He's like, done. When can I go? That's some idea of how much and how horrible the CAECO call business is, that guys would clearly opt for Vietnam. And in one of the most stunning things I've ever heard on this program. 100. I mean, we know guys who run from one, brave men who run from doing a CAECO call because they just don't want to go there. And
right.
To do 100, and pretty one of the most unbelievable things I've ever heard on this program. All right, so now we're going to switch gears. That was just kind of the transition. Now Afghanistan. Okay, Afghanistan, as it has been explained to me, just so I can set this thing. And again, the person that told me this is relatively high in the pecking order of the American military. Okay?
Right.
One, strategic presence in the region we need. Two, we need to manage Afghanistan because Pakistan is a nuclear nation and we don't need Pakistan destabilized, as painful as that is for me to say. Three, there's two wars going on inside of that. Of that country. One is a denial war, denying ISIS and Al-Qaeda an area to do what they did to us before on September 11th. And then I want to say, what is this, about the fourth rung on the ladder? And then there's a fight between Jarrah and the Taliban, which we support. All of that is encircled in the broad term Afghanistan, the war in Afghanistan. Okay, so in that, I want in 24 months, let's just assume that we're going to draw down again in some way, shape, or form. What happens? What do you think happens in Afghanistan, Jeff?
Well, I think the Taliban will solidify their control over most of the rural areas, which is most Afghanistan, and the cities will be hung on to by the Jarrah, by the government of Islamic government of Afghanistan. And if we pull down by 7,000, that's inevitable. And what will happen then is they'll both maintain their viability by conducting operations against each other, but it will just go on and on, a blade-type stalemate, where there'll be damn little, like, attack-and-defend-type things, and a hell of a lot of the Jarrah folks will use drone strikes and stuff like that they get from us. And the bad guys will do like what they did last weekend, the bad guys being the opposite side we're not with. They'll do suicide vehicle bomb attacks followed by assaults with guys wearing suicide vests.
Right.
That's out of the tradition of that country, to commit suicide while you're killing people. But in the last 10 years, actually not even the last 10 years, the last 7 or 8 years, that's become the norm. You know, first suicide bombing I think they ever really saw, even in all that time against the Russians, you didn't really see too much suicide stuff, not by Afghan nationals. But the first one of note was the assassination of Massoud, who was a prime leader during the anti-Russian war and then the head of the Northern Alliance in the war against the Taliban.
and he was killed by basically minions of Osama bin Laden, Moroccans, I think they were, they claimed to be, who were there as journalists, and they had exploding cameras and killed the guy. And ever since then, it's been a growing thing, but not so much when I was there. I don't know, Timmy probably saw more. I mean, but, you know, you didn't really start seeing the suicide thing until like 9, 10.
Right. Right.
You know?
No, it was so rare. We would hear about them. I mean,
right.
It was so weird because I think it was the major difference between, for us, Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Was that every day in Iraq, you went out and everybody that came close to you, you had to treat like they were going to blow themselves up because they did. They were unbelievably effective, whether using cars, water trucks to knock down buildings, or guys walking into recruiting stations with vests on to blow up people. They were incredible at it in Iraq. You go to Afghanistan, not part of their culture. And I remember the few that we had in 2010, 2011, we would hear about them. If you could imagine that shit. Hey, somebody's got a guy here. And they would be looking for him. And they found one of them at the southern end of Marja trying to get near City Hall or something like that. They were chasing him down the street, shooting at him. He was losing his mind. It was a total shit show. But, I mean, stuff that you would never see in Iraq. And the other thing, what that caused in Iraq was a lot of escalation of force incidents that killed that killed a lot of civilians by a lot of scared Marines and soldiers who interpreted something wrong when they had about a half a second to do the interpretation.
Right.
And it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. We eventually, I think, got fairly good at it in terms of we stayed off the roads, the highways and shit during the day. We wagon wheeled our sustainment stuff at night. And so it was only the combat units that were out during the day. And we got pretty good with signs and all kinds of shit to stop it. But it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible because they were really good at it. Afghanistan, almost completely different, but slowly but surely you're seeing increases in this. And I want to ask you a question, Jeff, about it. Every time I see one of those things, I was told that, hey, it's another Sunni event because this is a Sunni thing. It's not a Shiite thing. Is that true?
Well, most of the people in Afghanistan are Sunni.
Right.
The only minority there that's not is the Hazaras, who look like Koreans, you know? And that ethnic group is exclusively Shia, pretty much. But Pashtuns and the Tajiks, the two biggest ethnic groups, are both pretty much Sunni. And so, you know, I think what you're saying is they're saying it's like a foreign fighter, Arab thing, or Pakistani thing, that these guys come up and do that. And I have to tell you, I think that, you know, I think anymore they've got a minority of Muslims who just they can convince to do this stuff. Oh. I got some experience like you did in Iraq with suicide bombers, and the one most evocative one was a guy tried to kill the police chief in the Baghdadi area, and they got this kid, and he was drugged, he was drunk, you know. He ran into one of the elders of the Al-Ubaidi tribe, and they had a hand-to-hand fight, and finally the sheik there, his name was Sheikh Basim, he killed the guy with a Glock, and him and his brother killed the guy. And so he didn't get a chance to blow himself up. But it seems to me that you got your first line of suicide bombers who are so dedicated, they'll do it stone cold sober.
Right.
But most people, knowing that these are your last few minutes of life, it's got to be like a little mini version of the Garden of Gethsemane for them, where they're sweating blood. So they take something. Or they're held hostage by some of their relatives who are being held, you know, and there's all kind of evil machinations on how you make somebody do something like that.
Right. So let me go. So what you see is the Taliban and can we talk big T, little T, Big Taliban, Little Taliban. So this is Big Taliban, Little Taliban kind of merged together because of their success and take over the majority of the rural areas and reestablish all their shadow provincial governments and their governance functions as they slowly but surely take over rural areas that will be the Afghan military will have to give up because they simply aren't good enough to sustain their presence there.
Yeah.
Okay, and then so the army will secure the city-states, Kandahar, Kabul, all the major cities will all be are the city-states, and that's the way Afghanistan has essentially been ruled. Like, those people don't give a fuck about Helmand. What? Lashkargah? What, are you kidding me? Who cares? Right?
Yeah.
We're Kandahar. And so that's how it'll go. At some point, there's a Taliban, because it's easy to wreck a city.
Right?
Do they begin to just lay the wood to the cities and fuck up the money flow in the cities until they take over the entire nation again?
No, they get bribed.
They make a deal.
Yeah. I think that's the way it's going to go.
Hey.
I think, when the Taliban took over the country the first time, it had been ravaged because of the Soviet invasion.
Right.
It really radicalized the religious folks there and everything, and so when the Taliban was able to step in after the warlords who basically led the jihad against the Russians, they fell to feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys in a weakened state, and the Taliban, a bunch of farmers under Kandahar area and everything, just had a good and like most effective message is very simple, believable. Hey, look. You know, the problem with you guys is you forgot about Islam. Well, we're here to remind you. And so they were able to get a lot of recruits, and they took most of the country. And then only their own, the thing that made them effective is also the thing that made people hate them, because they're very uncompromising in Islamic law, Sharia law.
Okay.
I mean, to the point where they're using the soccer stadiums to execute women that they catch walking around with their heads uncovered. And so consequently, that's the struggle now. I mean, that's a struggle across the Islamic world. It's this struggle between the conservatives who say, hey, look, this isn't just religion. This is our way of life. And then the moderates who say, hey, look, this religion shit is okay as long as you don't take it too seriously. That's what my father said about being Catholic.
Right.
And so that's basically the struggle, I think, there. It's exacerbated, though, to a huge degree. The poppy. Okay, hold on.
I want to come back to the economics of it. Tim, go ahead. So Jeff says.
Yeah, no. There's something important to remember. So Afghanistan's got these line ministries, right, that run straight down into the district level, the Ministry of Education, Rural Redevelopment,
right.
And Rehabilitation, all those things, right? All those different. Those line ministries are functioning inside those Taliban-controlled districts. They still funnel their money down and pay for school teachers and pay for doctors and clinics and crap like that.
Wait, hold on. So when the Taliban overrun Helmand, Giroux is still going to send money down there to educate kids?
Absolutely. I read this article within the New York Times about Musa Qawwa and how they did it in Musa Qawwa. They got a wall of money down there, they absolutely do. So when you start, that's the one thing important to remember when you talk about contested and non-contested districts. The district line ministries are still functioning. Despite the dysfunctionality of the central government. So things down there are not quite what they seem. You know what I mean?
I don't
see that place floating.
I hate that. Okay, Tim, so give me your prediction. In the next 24 months, what happens, assuming that we draw down, what happens to Afghanistan?
We draw down 7,000, which means we continue the counterterrorism mission. So that's going to be special forces guys targeting ISIS, ISIS-K and Al-Qaeda, and there's plenty of them there.
Right.
And then the Kabul government's got to contract, got to concede some tariffs. It's going to contract and harden. because it doesn't matter about our military health as much as they're funding. Who's funding the government? I mean, right now we're making up the deficit. It's a $70 billion a year burn rate. And,
yep.
And they've got pledged money through 2020. After 2020, nobody's pledged a damn thing. So the question is who funds the government? Because as long as they get paid and can buy weapons and access technical help, they can hold on to that country indefinitely.
Which brings us back to the top.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
So, Tim, so what happens in terms of, you know, Jeff laid out pretty good, the Taliban will control the rural area, the government will control the urban areas, you'll see fights around the urban areas, and you'll have a stalemate. People will beg for a political solution, but it'll essentially be a stalemate in Afghanistan with more violence. You talked about the American counterterrorism mission will continue as we shrink the force. What is your take on what's going to happen inside of Afghanistan between the government and the Taliban?
Well, there's going to be some areas that are bitter civil war. The Hazara area in Ghazni province is a perfect example. They've been overrun a couple times, and that's prime real estate, and the Pashtuns have wanted that for about a couple hundred years. So there'll be a little bit of adjusting of population as the lines kind of harden between Taliban control and those who aren't down with the Taliban, of which there's plenty. And the government, of course, will be involved in that. But as long as the money spigot's turned on, the government will hold. If we put through what we did to Vietnam and turn off the money in the arms spigot, that's disaster. That's going to be like Mad Max.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, but again, I assume that if we're going to wind this thing down, the reason we're going to cut troop levels is to cut funding levels. And we're not interested in that scenario anymore. And so now let's talk about the economics of funding the war and the economics of opium. Jeff, go ahead.
Well, the opium thing was one of the features of the early Taliban was they didn't tolerate that, supposedly. And so it kind of, you know, disappeared.
I think that's bullshit.
I don't think it's not as cut and dried as that.
Yeah.
The legend is that they didn't tolerate. Just like it's bullshit that the mafia didn't start doing drugs until the 70s.
Yeah,
the truth is they were involved.
But here's why I think it's bullshit that the Taliban. What I could see them saying is nobody amongst us will use it, and if you do, we'll kill you. But we need this as for our own revenue, because if they shut up their own revenue source, they're dumber than shit.
Matt,
remember the guy I worked for, that company that I was working for, CADG, the development guys, when I was down in Glasgow and hanging out with you guys, the owner of that company, Steve Salas, had been exporting pomegranates from the Taliban. He was headquartered in Singapore. He'd been doing that since 1998 or so. And so he had a big network in the helmet. Once the Taliban figured out that all he wanted was pomegranates, they were more than happy to let him come in the country and buy. And he said he never saw poppy anywhere. He was all over the helmet back in Taliban days. Never saw any poppy.
Come on, man.
That's what I'm telling you.
Look, I didn't bring you on to host Fairy Tale Hour, okay?
No, I'm giving you some first-hand information.
But look, let me just tell you. You know what? It sounds compelling, but let me tell you one thing about farmers I know from being around them a lot up in North Dakota. They can fucking count.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. Just relaying a report. Okay, Jeff, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think that has really been a game changer since around, like, 2006. Whenever the Brits got back involved in Helmand, I mean, I think they were trying to think, we'll go back in there and it'll help solve our drug problem. Because most of European dope then was coming in through Helmand Province.
Right.
Now, most of the world's dope comes in seas through Helmand Province. So it had the opposite effect, what was intended.
There's too much money, and it's the only thing that keeps everything together because everybody's in on it. Everybody's getting money from opium, from protecting it, to transporting it, to refining it, to shipping it. It's all taxed by the Taliban, so they got to have it. Like, what is the Taliban going to do? Like, okay, we'll go sideways for 5 years. We'll pick up your funding while you plant pomegranate trees, and then only pomegranate after 5 years, boys. No dope.
It's just, I guess in Hellman, too, I read this book called Little America, and everything you grow there after 3 or 4 years starts out good. After 3 or 4 years, the crop gets progressively bad, worse. And the only one that seems to thrive is poppy.
Well, that's because trees don't survive if somebody's pouring battered acid on the roots, okay? That's how that shit works. It's like, yeah, you're gonna plant $4 billion worth of poppy trees in Afghanistan, and I'm gonna take a 55-gallon drum with battered acid in it, and I'm gonna like turn it all upside down because I don't need this shit. I need poppy. So yeah, I think it's a fool's errand. I mean, you better be ready to kill a lot of people, and I don't see the Taliban shutting off their revenue source like that. So all right, Tim, finish your so economically, if the money, so give me the variables. The money is American and coalition money into Afghanistan, right, for Jiroa, and it's poppy for the Taliban, right? And if the money gets shut off to Jiroa, then what?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Then it's not going to be able to stand. The armed forces are going to melt away. People are going to change sides with the speed of lightning. It would be a disaster. I just can't imagine it. I can't imagine everybody just stepping aside and watching. It'd be like 1975 in Saigon. The same damn thing.
But again, the Arab way is to make a deal, right? As soon as you became the police chief in Ramadi, what was the first phone call you made to? Right? The head of the Al-Qaeda cell in the region. Hey, Larry, this is Mac. Just going to say, we're going to do business together. There's no reason we can't both do well, right? That's the way they do it. We don't look at the world like that, right? But they do. And that's why Jeff said, you know, okay, what's going to happen between the Kurds, the Syrians, and the Turks? And then what was the first thing? First words out of his mouth? The Kurds are going to make a deal. The Kurds are going to make a deal. Well, no shit, man. That's the way it goes. That's the way they do it. All right, Jeff, your prediction about the money piece. Money gets shut off to Jiroa. Troop numbers dwindle.
The best
what
thing that can happen, Tim, right? It will be like 1975 in South Vietnam. Where the whole thing, it's like whoever can get away will try and get away, and whoever can't will try and make a deal, but they won't have anything to bargain with because the money's gone. I think the worst thing that can happen.
I think you're wrong about that, because I will tell you this. I think the deals are already in place. It's not like they haven't been down this road before, right? And we found out in 2010-11 when President Obama made his statement that we're leaving. I mean, the phone lines lit up to Quetta.
Yeah.
Right? Hey, Merle, this is Mac. You know we're just here fucking with the Americans because you're not here. When you come back, we'll have the big parade. We'll do the big goat sacrifice. You know, we'll get the Chai Boys out. We'll get them some new makeup. It'll be awesome. Looking forward to it, bro.
Fozzie boys.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, those phone calls have already been – they've already been made. Those deals are already cut. We're just waiting for you to come back.
But I have to tell you, though, Mac, just a reminder, after the Russians left, all right, there was no – and after their money ran out, that's when the real horror started for Afghanistan. That's where you had guys like Dostum and Massoud and Hekmatyar squaring off against each other, and the people in between got massacred.
Explain who those guys are so everybody understands.
Okay. Dostum is a Uzbek warlord who was in the army, and he worked for the Russians pretty much off and on during the Russian occupation. Massoud is a Tajik resistance leader who had people from all ethnic groups, and he's kind of different than most, and that he was kind of, I won't say secular, but he let other people in. Hekmatyar, pure Pashtun extremist, basically the godfather of the Hig organization. And then there's a couple other warlord guys who have names I can't pronounce are in there who they're not going to, they're going to not let each, they're going to be, it's going to be like mafia families going after each other. Only thing, they'll use artillery and stuff that they gleaned from us and the Germans and the Italians and whoever else left stuff in there for them. And they'll go after each other. I think you'll have a repeat what we had in the 90s post-Soviet money running out. Because the Soviets left in 89, but their money didn't run out until about 91 or 2. And that's when they finally took over. That's when Afghanistan was taken over by the resistance. And the president, whose name was Tim, what was his name? He got castrated. Not Karmal, but somebody else. Anyway, this guy, he got castrated right there and you know, mutilated and murdered and everything else. And then it just was like awful in Afghanistan. And then when the dust settled, you had the worst bunch in charge, the Taliban. So, I mean, if the money runs out and they don't find another way of popping up their government, I think Tim's right. The army will melt. Wait, who's going to hang around with no pay? They're going to go to work for one of those warlord guys who's got money. And how does he have money? He extorts money from dope dealers, you know? And,
he is the dope dealer. He's the regional dope dealer. Okay, let me ask you this. What happens if some funding, not the current level of funding, but let's just say half the level of funding happens? Do we limp along until at some point the Taliban, it's going to take the Taliban longer to get control of the country?
It depends on the strings that comes with the financing, because a lot of this financing comes with anti-corruption goals that the Afghan government is supposed to certify that they're meeting, not that they've met a one yet.
Yeah, but so, okay, so I, okay, so let me ask you.
There's a lot of variables.
All right, so let me ask you. So I give you a goal of whatever, all right, throw one out there. I don't give a shit. All right, you don't meet it, right? What am I going to do, cut your funding even more and then hasten, you know, the transfer of the country to the Taliban?
So what you're asking?
No, I mean that's how the mechanism is supposed to function. I'm just telling you that's how it's supposed to function. So it depends on what strings come attached. Obviously, there's been no consequences for failing to meet their goals, like, you know, accounting for 60% of the money that they've received, something basic like that. But so funding happens. It depends who does the funding. I tell you, two people who want to do some funding would be India and China. Now, wouldn't that be interesting? If they came into the breach, that could happen too.
Well, we all, I mean, anybody who reads a little bit, they're already in Pakistan.
They're already in Afghanistan, Chinese.
Right.
Yeah, Chinese.
Right. Well, hey, only doing little construction, yeah. Okay? No reason to get excited here, boys.
No, they've got military advisors in northern Afghanistan.
Tell me about the rest of that story. Under the caveat of what? I can't remember.
There's an Alpine Brigade up there in Badakhshan district. That's the little corridor that touches with China, right where the Uyghurs are too. And the Chinese have been training the Afghan the Uyghur border police. Now they've all gone over to the Defense Department. I guess an army unit now. But they've been training those guys. They haven't been mixing it up with anybody. There's nobody up there. But, they've already got a foothold in there. They've bought the rights to several large copper deposits and other mineral rights, but they've got to also build railroads to exploit that as part of the contract.
All right, let me read you guys a couple of emails. Here's the first message.
Try not to hit the ones that call me and Tim retards.
One of them says, could you please ask the one guy to stop using the R word? Yeah, you know, you're one of the few people that still use that word. It's largely frowned upon in popular culture. Do you know that?
Yeah, I heard that from my wife.
I know. All right, well, just so you know.
I don't mean it as a compliment.
Hey, he took a shot to the fucking head. Come on, man.
Here's the first one. When I hear you three ass clowns talking so much good shit, I want to join the Marine Corps again. Yeah, there you go. You can hang out with gifted people like us.
Yeah. Well, I had my stepson send that in.
here's another one. The sentiment I take from all three of you is that the world is going to get worse in the area of Syria, the area along the Turkish border, and in the Sunni area of Iraq. It's also going to get worse in Afghanistan. This is awesome. Thank God I listened to this show right after Christmas. Is that true?
Yes. Well, I mean, you can't blame us. We got experience in that area. You know, they say Afghanistan's always been a war. That's not true. But since roughly the mid-70s, it is true. And so it just stands to reason that it would go on, you know?
Here's another one. Assuming we go back to this fighting that we've seen, what do you see as an end state for all of that? All right, so let's talk about Syria first. So a fight ensues, and let's just say by some miracle, the United States is able to keep it away from Israel. So we're not going to get the Israeli thing involved in it. What happens in Syria, around the Turkish area and Iraq? What ultimately happens?
Oh man. Well, I don't think you can. The Israelis, that's a huge plus for the Israelis to have the Syria not involved in activities against them.
Well, they will be. I'm just saying, let's just say that that the United States and Israel are able to manage it, and Israel whacks everything they want to whack, and nobody gets into Israel too bad. So that goes on. How does this ultimately end? Because in the land of the Iron Fist, right, we're not going to, like, well, if it could only be just a representative democracy, then everybody would be happy.
Yeah.
That ain't happening anytime soon. Okay, so are we waiting for the next Saddam Hussein to rise up? The Shiite version of Saddam Hussein, who goes out and ruthlessly develops a military, and then goes out and crushes the Sunnis out west and stays out there to occupy that nation? That to me, and then the same thing in Syria. Until Assad gets the military capability that he needs to thump the shit out of everybody and keep everybody in their place, you will never have peace. Kenny?
Yeah. I think that eventually the Russians will leave. And they're not like us. They just leave.
Right.
You know, they don't agonize over the moral implications of their departure. They just leave, like they did in Egypt, or they get kicked out.
Do you think, let me ask you this, do you think that our departure hastens their departure?
I think they'll hang around for a while. The minute they don't see it as a plus, they'll leave. You know, they learned their lesson, I think, in Afghanistan, and, you know, and they're not a wealthy country by any means. Russia.
I think our departure hastens theirs because he knows. I mean, supposedly in that phone call when Trump said, "Well, okay, we'll leave then." Erdogan said, "Hey, whoa, wait a minute, let's not do anything crazy."
Exactly. Yeah, and then I think the Turks will see how expensive it is to try. There's a up in that northwestern corner of Iraq. Remember that mountain, Mount Sinjar. There's very lucrative oil fields around there. They may try and, like, annex that part, the Turks, but I think eventually what it will come down to is this: what you just said. The guy, maybe it'll be Assad, maybe it'll be somebody after him, but it'll be a strong man who hangs on to Syria, and he does it by force.
Tim, that's the only way it works. So your thoughts on both what
no, I think that part of the Euphrates Valley that Assad doesn't control now, he may not control when it's all said and done with, and you might have a little readjustment of reality on the ground. It depends on if the Kurds are allowed to exploit their mineral wealth or not, and how that all shakes out, quite frankly. So I'll tell you one thing about the future is we don't have much of a say in it anymore. That's for sure.
Yeah.
On that positive note, the Kurds will cut a deal with the Iraqi government. How does this deal work? Right, they have to, right?
They've always been doing.
They have
that.
To.
Right.
They have to. Otherwise, they can't export their. They got to export their oil.
Okay, so what's the deal? Is the Iraqis going to say, look, stop talking about an independent country. In fact, you're going to run all this shit up here anyway, like you have for, going on two decades now. Just shut up with that independent shit, right? We need a piece of your oil money and do that, and everything will be good up here. Yay? Is that the making of a deal?
Yeah, but that's the making of a deal, but the devil's in the details. It's how much autonomy do they grant the Kurdish authority? If they grant them de facto autonomy, it doesn't matter what you call it, it's Kurdistan now.
Right.
No, not necessarily. I don't give a shit how you educate. I don't give a shit how you do anything. My army will be up there. Okay? Now, does Iraq have the ass to do that?
No, they can't go up there and tag. I don't believe so.
I think they'll look for a good deal on that oil and then let the Kurds control and call it good. At least for a while, because of the cost of trying to do that. And they don't really have much, beyond the – I mean, they have a lot of oil down there by the Shatt al-Arab and so forth. But, they want to hang on to that. So I don't know if they're going to if they're going to go that way.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at what people are capable of in terms of deals and things like that. So while the Iraqis would love to say, hey, we're going to extend our hand, they can't control out Al Anbar without us.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, and if you want to see a good fight, it'd be interesting if they went up north and took on the Kurds. I mean, that would be
something else. And there's something else too. Iraq's covered with these Shia militia groups.
Right.
And some of them are obviously loyal to Iran, and a lot of them aren't. So it's another, witch's brew add to the mix type thing,
And the only thing, again, you can see, the only thing that straightens it out is the iron fist of the strong man. And now you can see the folly in Donnie Rumsfeld, that piece of shit. Yeah, we'll get a Republican, some kind of form of government, a representative form of government in there, and we'll get everybody to the table and they'll work it out. Come on.
Now you're playing my song, Matt.
You look back and again, Zinni, hey, all this was predicted in the war plan, and it just makes you want to choke Rumsfeld even more because we got what they said would happen if we took the guy out. And so, I hold Colin Powell in low regard. As Secretary of State, when he was Bush and Rumsfeld's errand boy to the UN with that, I remember watching that thinking, okay, what has he got? And you saw he's got two helicopters that have, what? He's got, and there's piping in this factory, that's it? We're going to go to war for this shit, and we've stood face to face against the Soviet Union around the world for 50 fucking years, and this monkey we're going to go to war for. Stupid.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and then exacerbated by the stupid way they decided to fight it and firing everybody who's trying to say, hey, look, you know what, this turns into disaster. You need to be more prudent about what type of force you put in there. Nope, you're fired. Goodbye, General Nibble. Goodbye, General Shinseki.
No, and again, and Powell should have known better because he's a Vietnam guy, and the Vietnam guys, they were so proud of Desert Storm because it's like, this is the way we learned our lesson. We haven't gotten involved in bullshit wars and got people killed for no reason. We got a mission. We went in there with overwhelming force. We got in. We got out. All right. It was like the Desert Storm is like the perfect war. Okay. It's the perfect war, and it's almost kind of this anomaly, and it's not even, don't even refer to Desert Storm because that was stupid, okay? No, their wars aren't normally fought like that. They're not that neat and tidy, and somebody lays down against you just like you practiced against it for the last 30 years in the desert, right?
Yes.
So anyway, what haven't I?
I'm trying to think of a better enemy.
What haven't I asked either one of you two about this issue in terms of the next going forward that you want to get off your chest before I let you go?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think we pretty much covered it. But if you want to have you want your ratings to go up or whatever, however it works, you got to have let me and Tim talk about the Shepherdstown Dick Festival, and then people will tune in again and again.
All right. When are you guys both available to do that?
Tim, are you there?
Did he hang up? It says he's still here.
I don't know.
We've been on an hour and 20, but there was some little dog yapping.
I'm here.
Okay. I was just telling Mac, Tim, that if he wants good ratings, he should have me and you talk about the pros and cons of the Shepherdstown Dick Festival.
I swear to God, that's hysterical. No, and I was saying, I even ran into a guy in Afghanistan who had a son that was going to Shepherdstown. I said, don't tell you about Shepherdstown. No. Okay, I got one some ground regarding what we were talking about today, and that is that now, with the way that the president has shown General Mattis the door, and he seems to be cutting troop levels and whatnot, now Congress, who, in what was it, 1973 passed the Wars Powers Resolution Act that said, you can't be doing stuff without us.
Right.
For longer than 90 days. Yeah. Now they're forced to get in and make some decisions there, Orange man bad.
And
Islamic terror is bad. So what are they going to do? This is fascinating to me. I'm looking forward to seeing how they react.
But the bottom line is that we expect both those parts of the world to get worse. Okay, fine.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a final question. What gets the United States back into a shooting war in either one of those places?
Oh, that's an outside nation pushing in a kinetic way.
Like China?
The Kurds start getting their ass changed to them, and that would be one way.
Hold on. The atrocities, we won't go in there because of atrocities, unless there's a lot of video of them, and then we might. What about, so who gets after the Kurds? The Turks get after the Kurds in a big way, and then we have to go back in there? Is that what you're saying?
Turks get after the Kurds in a big way. Yeah, they start shelling, killing civilians, doing Turkish stuff.
Well, they're going to do that. They're going to do that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. If they do that, I don't see us just standing by and saying, "Oh, but then
the news media will put folks in there. They'll pay a shitload of money to put folks in there because they'll make the president look bad."
Well. But I thought the president said the Russians had guaranteed this, though.
I thought he said...
Yeah, what the hell did that mean?
Erdogan said that. Guaranteed.
Okay, look, anytime the Russians guarantee shit, that's a problem. Okay, I'm just telling you. The Russians, man, they don't honor any deal they cut. When their lips are moving, they're lying. It's a joke. So anyway, all right. Well, on that positive picture, then I want to thank both of you for coming on and doing this again today.
Thanks for having us, man.
No, always fun.
Oh yeah, always a pleasure, man. Always a pleasure. Thanks, brother.
Well,
see you, Jeff.
Always fun to have my buddies on. So Jeff Kenny, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, retired now, living out here on the West Coast, joined us, and then Tim Lynch, Major, United States Marine Corps, living down in McAllen, Texas, doing a little gardening. Was that your little dog that was yapping the whole thing time?
Yeah, man, I gotta keep the front of the house looking nice. Come on, it's a nice neighborhood.
man. All right, boys. Hey, happy New Year. I'll talk to you.
Happy New Year too.
Happy New Year.
There you have it.
All right, man. Bye.
There you have it. Those are smart guys, and you know what would be fun to have our friends that are general officers on with this group, and because it's pretty funny, right? And you don't hear general officers get told you don't know shit very often, but you might hear it in that group, and. But all of the same kind, all cut from the same kind of bulk of cloth, irreverent, a little bit, funny as hell, tough, and now with a lot of experience in these parts of the world that, you know, and again, funny stuff that during the interviews, you know, what's going to happen in Syria? Well, the Kurds will make a deal. That's how you do it. You know, next, you know, and then just the conversation about suicide bombers, what we've all seen and experienced, and also the conversation about poppy. Poppy is the lubricant of whatever happens over there because it is a funding source. The whole reason the Marine Corps was down in Helmand was to deny the Taliban their source of funding. That was the center of gravity. So you go down there and you try to fight them for it. But, you know, but what it does is poppy supports the entire region. It's not like a crop that farmers have and then they sell. It supports everybody. It pays off the police chief. It pays off the provincial governor. Everybody's in on it. And so if you're going to supplant that, pomegranate trees, really? I guess, maybe. Maybe. I've been told that. But who's going to guarantee all those farmers 5 years' worth of income? Somebody going to do that? Where's that money coming from? So, anyway, you can see the problems are not easy. They're complex. And you see these guys who've been, I can tell you from all of our perspective, you talk about riveting experiences when you would go forward to Iraq or Afghanistan. The cultural issues, the economic issues, the military issues, all swirling constantly in this dynamic arena to solve problems in. And that's why fun's the wrong word, but it's so fulfilling to do it with your friends, guys who, you know, we all met in 1990, 91, 92, 93, working together in Quantico. Smart as fuck. Tough. And fun to be around. And so to go forward with them, to have a kindred spirit, to talk about these things, was very cool, very cool. And, you know, Dave Furness, Major General, CG of the 2nd Marine Division, and I deployed 3 different times. And, you know, you go through this with your friends, and it's very cool, very cool. All right, we're going to take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Don't touch that dial.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I forgot. No more Christmas music. This is my actual walk-up music now.
You ready? You grab that right there.
Are you ready? Oh, is you ready?
Ready.
You say you ready?
Oh,
whole squad ready?
Ready.
Is you ready?
Oh.
Are you ready?
Ready.
Is you ready? Whole squad ready. We came here to see Jeff. What you got? No, no, no. Not on my watch. No way.
Is you ready?
Going to the top. You can bring what you got. I'm going to the top. Bring what you got.
You know, I have this thing in my head. I can see Marines getting ready.
I'm going to the top.
Are you ready?
Putting their PPE on. Getting ready to get on vehicles. Machine guns going up on mounts. People looking at maps. Motivating.
Are you ready? Is you ready?
Ready.
You say you ready? Whole squad ready?
Ready.
Is you ready?
Huh?
Are you ready?
Ready.
Is you ready? Whole squad ready. We came here to see Jeff. What you got? No, no, no. Not on my watch.
No way.
Bring what you got. I'm going to the top. You can bring what you got. I'm going to the top. Bring what you got. Bring what you got.
This is about McGurk. Mac, losing McGurk is no big loss. Good riddance. Bad judgment in having an affair with a reporter, with journalistic, cost him Iraq ambassadorship during Obama years. You know, whatever. That would not be what I was focused on relative to McGurk. You know, I know that when people don't like something that somebody does, first thing they do is like, they bury into their Twitter account to find something they did when they were 14, and they throw that on and say, hey, the guy's a total asshole. When he was 14, You know, he called somebody a queer. So then, you know, they roll him out. He apologizes after he wins the Heisman Trophy. Sorry for what I tweeted when I was 15. You know, McGirt's personal life, to me, I could care about. You know, I think that, again, you just heard two guys that have spent years in those places. And, you know, the question is there a tipping point that the United States will have to get back involved in a shooting war? What is that? When the Syrians contact the Chinese and say, yeah, well, you can take over our freshwater ports here, or our deep sea ports here on the Med, in exchange for two Chinese divisions? I don't know. Or the same thing, they make concessions in Iraq with ports and oil infrastructure in exchange for two divisions to go garrison the western part of Iraq. China gets into kind of the mercenary business. That tipped the balance of power in the Middle East. China not known for respecting human rights. So, I don't know. So, we'll see. But I think you heard from three different people who have three very different perspectives about what an American and a NATO and Western democracy shrinking footprint does to both those regions. And both will become more violent because of it. So, and again, it goes back to winning the peace. And people can poo-poo that shit all they want. But what you're trying to promote is stability. And, again, the mistake in Afghanistan was Colin Powell's. Yeah, Colin Powell, again, brutal. Absolutely, positively brutal. After we went up into Tora Bora and we determined that Osama bin Laden wasn't there, you know, there's a fork in the road. Do you stay and get in the nation-building business here? You know, and there are people that argue that we should have. You know, you have to. If you don't do it, then we're just going to, well, then just tell them. We're not going to get in the nation-building business. We will tell you this, so we'll come and ruin everything. And we're not going to pay to fix it. If people come here and line up against the United States. Or you can go try to take the whole thing over again. Yeah. So, and we opted for one course of action, which was to stay and help the federal government. And we're still there. So, is it in the American interest? And again, what's in the American interest is a strategic presence in the region. What's in the American interest is the ongoing fight against Al-Qaeda. And the Islamic State. And then in order to accomplish that, your partner is the federal government of Afghanistan, and so you support their fight against the Taliban. So, we'll see how much of that goes away. But, again, I think that everybody on the program today sees more violence, in the offing. And that if no strong man emerges in Syria, in Iraq, and clearly they can't do it, you know, or else they would have done it already. So whether the revenue is not enough in Iraq, whether they need to sign some kind of treaty with the Kurds, you know, I don't know why the Iraqis wouldn't do that. Sign a treaty with the Kurds and in exchange for, you know, oil rights. You know, a percentage of what they produce. Use that money to develop your military and then go subdue Al-Anbar and you'll have a predominantly Shiite nation that's at peace. But I don't know. I don't know how it works in the back rooms of Iraq that, you know, that we're not going to cool this country out. So, anyway, not too optimistic. Sorry about that. But smart guys. Anyway, don't touch that dial. The president and the first lady were in Iraq. So yesterday I called him a coward, and I guess he heard it. He immediately flew to Iraq. Congratulations. It's about time. 2 years in, you got to go make those trips, man. You'll hear about that. You'll hear about my trip to the computer store. Going to see the, going to, at 1 o'clock today, going to see, They Shall Not Grow Old. So I'm fired up about that. Be able to report back tomorrow about it. And, Ohio Man's going, so we'll get a report from him. And, see what he thought. Maybe I'll get Ohio Man to actually come on the program. He can call in the first hour. So, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, have a great day. Happy New Year, everybody. That's getting ready for it. Christmas in the rearview mirror. So, have a great day. My thanks to Jeff Kenney, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, for coming on again. My thanks to Tim Lynch. And you can see, smart guys, and fun to be in their company. And it's always challenging when you sit down because they make you think. They make you think. So, my thanks to them both for coming on and doing that. Anyway, have a great day. On a Thursday, All Marine Radio, over and out.